Okay, our final presentation is from Dr. Diana Hernandez. She's an assistant professor in the Department of Socio-Medical Sciences at the the Mailman School of Public Health at Columbia University. So, Dr. Hernandez, the floor is yours.
Good morning. I'd like to acknowledge the fact that I am here for Brennan Rhodes Brand, who was supposed to present on this work. We are kind of collaborating with Lourdes Hernandez Goldero, who will come up again in this presentation, and Mindy Fullove on this ongoing project. And we're all consensus members, but she had a family emergency, and so my thoughts are with her as she contends with that. And so today, you must also forgive me for the fact that I'm hoping to do a good job with this presentation, but it is kind of, it wasn't my intention to present, but whatever. So how do community academic partnerships grow, navigating the decision of becoming a formal entity or remaining a volunteer-based group? And I'd like to premise this talk with the idea that in many ways, as we consider sustainability in CBPR relationships, it's extremely important to think about when the funding dries up or when there are other changes in that community university partnership, which we'll describe here. And that's why the question about how do community academic partnerships exist, grow, sustain over time, why it's so important and relevant. And so our particular CBPR project is City Life is Moving Bodies, CLIME. It's a consensus group made up of various organizations throughout Northern Manhattan that are really pulled together with the idea of increasing the physical, social, and civic activities throughout the community. And CLIME is specifically kind of also targeted toward Northern Manhattan parks. And so there are, in this kind of new phase of CLIME, and our thinking about like kind of the strategic planning around how to move forward, we've settled on three arms. There's a trail development arm and kind of activating the trail of Northern Manhattan parks and connecting them officially, and we've actually made some strides in that regard. Hike the Heights, which is a kind of an annual celebration of the accomplishments of the consensus group, and then community-based participatory research, which is kind of an ongoing effort to document and evaluate the process. So Hike the Heights is, Mindy Fullove just wrote a book called Urban Alchemy, and she describes the kind of nine elements of what it takes to really revitalize a community. And one of the elements is celebration, like celebrating the milestones and celebrating the accomplishments, and Hike the Heights is very much kind of on the order of celebration. And so we're actually celebrating this coming year our 10th anniversary, which is a huge accomplishment. It has been literally, it's grown in size to, I think last year we had about 1,500 folks that went from the northern tip of Central Park all the way up through, in some ways, uncharted territory through parks in Northern Manhattan where people typically aren't visiting. And so the idea behind CLIME and the idea behind Hike the Heights is to really introduce and then also activate park utilization in these areas. And so you'll see these groups of kids. This is a Hike the Heights 2 picture, so this was years ago. And where, what's the vision and kind of what's the priority in this? So this is an image back in 2005 of a stairway going up in one of the parks. And through the help and the kind of raised consciousness of the need to kind of reconsider parks as an important community institution, and also that has the kind of health benefits around physical activity and also kind of socialization, building social capital, And then on the kind of health side, providing opportunities to reduce the risk of diabetes and obesity, the local city council person put in the funds and to actually reactivate and look at, or redo, I should say, the stairway that you see on the left in 2011. And since then, there's been a lot of work in terms of getting the trail both on the map, literally on the New York City Parks Department map, where they follow the trail. I call Mindy Fulop a trailblazer in the sense that she's like literally like pushing the trail so much. And Design New York City has given a grant recently, and there has been a lot of other support for doing this kind of work. So how has all of this gotten done? There have been many, many accomplishments over the years. A big part of it, and a big shout out to Lourdes Hernandez Cordero, who was on faculty at Columbia in sociomedical sciences, has since moved on to a new and very exciting position in the philanthropic world, but also a community member in the Northern Manhattan area. Her ability to create relationships and sustain them over time have been really impressive, but she's really been able to bring together, and it hasn't been a kind of a sole effort on her side, but she's a huge, I mean, when we talk about gatekeepers and key figures, she's certainly that. But it has been kind of a joint effort and shared values, expertise, work, kind of sharing social capital, building social capital, and then a huge volunteer effort. And it's really come in the context of a potluck model. So if we can imagine like your favorite potluck where you bring in your favorite dish, the one dish that you can actually cook well, which for me might be a salad or something really basic, and for some other people might be something more elaborate. But the idea is that we all come together and we have a kind of complementary set of skill sets and then make something beautiful in this potluck fashion. And so, the same is true for the way that we think of our partners and the way that we engage in a strength-based model where people are coming in with the things that make them kind of unique and strong and add some new flavor to the mix. With all of that kind of combined, then we can see the possibility of strengthening the community through those relationships that are formed. And so these are several of our partners. You'll see that there's a wide array of interests and of a focus in their own particular work. Some of it is very environmentally based or academically based or parks based or health based, but either way that they're all coming in and they're doing something kind of unique for the partnership. But back in 2011, and this is a reality of the current funding climate, we kind of faced the challenge of having lost funding for the Columbia Center for Youth Violence Prevention, and where in the past, because the main kind of figurehead in some ways, and then a lot of the other activities were centered around this kind of the academic component, we were kind of all of a sudden in this conundrum of like, what to do, where do we go from here? Lourdes had gone on to City Harvest and now somewhere else, and then without the funding, you know, are these partnerships contingent on funding, or is there something beyond that that makes them special and that makes them sustainable? And so over the course of the last 2 years, we've been trying to figure out how to either, and I'll show you the kind of three options that we are negotiating, but the centrality of the academic support. And, you know, essentially we are kind of moving in a direction where academic support is still important, but it is not kind of the biggest player as it was in the past. And so we basically are kind of like the Puerto Ricans between three options. Puerto Rico, I'm Puerto Rican, and so is Lourdes. And so we were joking about this the other day that, you know, Puerto Ricans are constantly negotiating between statehood, status quo, or being independent. And in many ways, the Climb Consensus Group faces many of the same challenges, whether or not to be independent, to latch on to the academic partner side, or to remain status quo. And so here are the, we'll kind of outline the kind of advantages and disadvantages of each option. And so the advantages of kind of a nonprofit status, so that more independent route might be our ability, it's a more financial decision about being able to get our own grants and other donations, be our own kind of fiscal conduit. The disadvantages are that it would require a bigger kind of formal organizational structure, that it would require creating a board and kind of more formal, essentially. It's a lengthy process, but also the kind of formalities of having an ED and, you know, some of the other challenges. And we don't have the funds or the infrastructure to really support that. We also have the opportunity to merge with another existing 501c3, and so again, the advantages are largely financial, but the staff and the other kind of personnel infrastructure would already be in place. The disadvantages is that it might kind of change a little bit of the mission and the organizational structure, both at the existing 501c3, but also may kind of change the fabric of the consensus group and what makes it special, and then stay the same. So the advantages are that we can still rely on the university for liability insurance, for meeting space, for administrative assistance, and other, and also have the kind of relationship with the fiscal conduits. IOB is an online platform that does matching funds. So whenever we fundraise, it goes through that channel, and then they actually match funds. The disadvantages are that we're still unable to receive donations directly, that it has some implications for our fundraising capacity, and that there are some other challenges associated with indirect costs and the relationship with the university in that respect. So what are the recurring themes? First of all, that, you know, finances matter, and that in a soft money environment, where so much of the effort is supported through grants and the situation is a little bit tougher nowadays, that reality is serious, and we have to consider what a non kind of independent 501c3 status actually means in terms of handling money, but that Climb is overall a very good, there are kind of common good elements to Climb, and that these ideas of selling the collective may come up, and by that we mean something like, you know, this is an established relationship. Is it fair for other people to kind of leverage that when it's taken a long time to actually build? So what are the kind of lessons learned in all of this? First of all, the need to be humble. I think that we can also understand this from a very personal perspective. Whenever there's a kind of a change and a downshift in your economic situation, all of a sudden you're forced to kind of think more humbly about where you are and how to situate yourself, and then where to come up from that. And so essentially the humility and the resilience that are necessary is a lesson. Resisting the obvious to uphold our mission and respect our collective's contributions, and thinking about still nurturing the strength and understanding the partnership and still making it essentially real. Now, like I demonstrated in one of the last slides, we have come to terms with this idea that, you know, we will likely stay kind of in this status quo position where we still are able to benefit from the academic partnerships, the benefits of the academic partnership, while still kind of negotiating with the community, with the various players in the potluck. And so with that, I'd like to acknowledge the various, and you can see the list is really long, of our partners that have been involved in this process, but also welcome those of you who will be in New York City around, I think it's June 7th, to our Hike the Heights event. And thank you.
And I want to thank each and every one of you because, A, those are great, great, great presentations. Can I give a big round of applause for this?